Good afternoon, and welcome to Reminiscing, a program of nostalgia and recollections of the good old days, times that we remember as happy and maybe a little simpler. We know we can't go back, but we can certainly reminisce. This is your volunteer reader, Mary Ellen Stepanek, and you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, your 24-hour reading station. Good afternoon, and welcome to more stories, Christmas stories from the Good Old Days magazine. This one is entitled, A Ballerina's Wish. She knew something that expensive would never be under the tree. This was sent in by Nancy E. A. Hassel. When I was 5 in 1953, Mom and I were shopping in Lockport, New York. Back then, we went from store to store down Main Street. I remember seeing Christmas decorations overhead from one side of the street to the other. The tinsel garlands lit up at night. Where the garland came to a peak in mid-street, there was a wreath with a star. A tree adorned the marquee of the Palace Theater. Merchants' windows were embellished with Christmas colors. Some had exciting, moving scenes. I anticipated riding uphill to the city, traveling the bend in the road, and then there it was. Every year the Hilltop Bank exchanged its crown of white lights for alternating green and red. Then I knew for sure Christmas was coming. Even though we were baking cookies and prepping almonds and candied fruit for Christmas pudding, it was those holiday lights shining that meant Christmas was closer. My anticipation grew in intensity. That day, night fell as we shopped, and as we went from store to store, the windows were glorious. I looked at everything. I couldn't touch, but my eyes gazed at beautiful fabrics as my nose picked up the scent of perfume from another floor of the department store. There was a whole floor of furniture divided into sections resembling actual rooms. Every bedroom had knickknacks. I was fascinated by the little boxes with locks that were sitting on the dressers. No two were alike, and I longed for a little lockable box. I do not know what I could have put in the box. I just remember thinking how pretty they were. We went past the jewelry counters on the main floor, the glass cases filled with what appeared to be all the treasures of the world. Gold and silver gleamed, pearls glowed lustrously, and the gems, a veritable rainbow of sparkling emeralds, rubies, and diamonds, dazzled my imagination. There were jewelry stores then, but we only went there for watch repair, and the gems that so amazed me with their richness were probably costume jewelry. We left that big store and went to the Five and Dime, and that is where I saw the most wonderful item of all. I was passionate about ballet. Mom told everyone that I had seen a ballerina on a television program, and after that I would spin around dancing if there were dancers on TV or ballet music on the radio. So when I looked up and saw her, I fell in love. I believed she was looking right down into my eyes with her blue eyes. She didn't have an infant face like my baby dolls, but she did not look adult like the bride doll Mom had played with and refurbished for me. Her face was beautiful. Her hair was shiny and pink. I could see the silver bodice and, oh my, the pale pink tutu. I stopped to look, and Mom walked back to get me. Mom must have noticed my rapt gaze, my complete fascination with the doll. For me, time stopped. All there was in the world was me and the incredible beauty of this one perfect, unobtainable doll. She was all I could see until Mom spoke. I don't remember what she said, but I remember walking away with one last longing glance over my shoulder. There was no money for a doll like that. That year, as usual, we went to the midnight service. I was always a little proud and a little scared holding the candle. The church lights had been dimmed. Each congregant lit the next person's candle, and slowly light brightened the church. In this way, the light of the world came to us every year. We went home with our minds filled with beautiful music and the wonder of Jesus' birth. We went to bed and did not open presents until after breakfast the next day. This was the tradition handed down from my mother's mother. It was also tradition to have eggs and sweet rolls. Back then, I hated the eggs running onto the pastry. Now, it reminds me of our family table, the kitchen's warmth and all the love. Then, finally, the living room door was opened to reveal the tree. This, too, was tradition. There had been no closed door and no tree glowing with light, gleaming with ornaments and glittering from the aluminum tinsel when we had returned from church. Mom and Dad did this after church, after I'd gone to bed, to create magic for me. Beneath the tree, it looked to my eyes like there were limitless gifts. First, I emptied my stocking of small toys, some mixed nuts, and an orange in the toe. Then, every year, I received underwear from my Aunt Verna and a blouse or a sweater. There always seemed to be a book or two, plus a nightie, doll clothes, coloring books, and or jewelry kits of plastic to be assembled. This Christmas was full of the usual gifts, and after all were opened, we folded paper to reuse, rolled ribbons, and put everything back under the tree. Then someone found a forgotten gift for me. It was loosely wrapped in tissue paper that had tiny bits of glitter and stars, and it was lumpy. I removed the ribbon and peeled back the paper. I could not speak. Gazing up at me was that glorious, wonderful, unattainable doll. The wonder of her, the wonder of gaining my child's heart's desire, the wonder of her and me alone in the magic of being together. It took my voice. I could only look up at Mom. She was looking at me. It would be hard to say whose face shone with the most joy at the magic of Christmas. And this was A Ballerina's Wish by Nancy E. A. Hassel. This next story is entitled Christmas Joy Times Two. There are surprises, and then there are surprises. And this was one these brothers would never forget. This story was written and sent in by Douglas Clark. In the mountains of East Tennessee, the freezing wind coming through Big Ridge Gap signaled the coming of a harsh December. It was nigh on Christmas when my younger brother, Buddy Earl, and I were on our way down the double cow path known as our driveway. Buddy Earl pointed at the dark clouds tumbling across and down Little Pine Mountain. "Do you think we'll have snow for Christmas?" I stopped and took a long, deep lungful of air through my nose. The wind from the north is right, and it has the smell of snow." My brother lightly punched my shoulder. You're funning with me. If you're telling the truth, what does snow smell like? I smiled. Mama's fried chicken covered in her special Christmas gravy. Betty Earl smiled and sniffed the air. You are so lucky. All I smell is hemlock and pine trees. Come on, I replied. Let's get on down to the mailbox and back home. It looks like a freezing rain is on its way. This was our daily trip to the mailbox. We were waiting for the book, as everyone in our house called it. Do you think the mailman will bring the book today? Betty Earl asked. The one from last Christmas ain't nothing but shreds. As we neared the mailbox, Betty Earl pointed and shouted, That must be it, all wrapped up in brown paper as always. I placed my hand over my ear. You don't have to shout. I'm right beside you, not in the next county over. My brother picked up the package and smiled. Should I tear off the cover to see what's on the front page? Sure, I answered. Someone has to do it. Why not you? Betty Earl removed the paper wrapping. There it was, in all its glory. The Sears Roebuck Christmas Catalog. Back at the house, everyone gathered around like a bunch of chickens. Our older sisters wanted to see the clothes. Our brothers wanted to look at the hunting equipment. As for me and Betty Earl, it was all about the toys. The catalog was passed around until it found a resting place with me and Betty Earl. As we turned the pages of the toy section, I asked, What do you want for Christmas this year? Betty Earl gave me his rascally grin. All I want for Christmas is my... I quickly interrupted him. Please don't say your two front teeth. I don't want to hear that every year. Suddenly, Mama's voice sounded from the kitchen. Bring the catalog in here. I want to make out the order. You can have it back after I finish. In the kitchen, I handed Mama the catalog, and she smiled. Have you two made up your mind about what you want? Sure have, I replied. I want a bicycle to ride to school. I'm tired of walking. As for Betty Earl, he wants another two front teeth this year. My little brother was quick to respond. I do not. I was only funnin'. I want a boy's bicycle. Mama pointed at the catalog. See, it says wish book. I don't think Santa Claus can carry two bicycles in his pack. Betty Earl and I glanced at each other and shrugged our shoulders. What was Mama thinking? We stopped believing in Santa when we were 4 and 5 years old. The next morning, I walked down to the mailbox and mailed the order. Now it became a waiting game. 4 days before Christmas, a car horn sounded outside. It was the mailman delivering a bunch of packages. Betty Earl and I hurried outside to see what else was delivered. There were no bicycles. Betty Earl gave out a sigh. When I grow up and get rich, I'm going to buy 100 bicycles and ride a different one every day. Yeah, ain't it the truth, both you and me, I returned. I guess it'll be clothes and hard rock candy again this Christmas. When I awoke Christmas morning, everything was silent. No noise came from the kitchen, which was usually buzzing with sounds of breakfast being prepared. I lay quietly and listened. Only a light tinkling sound came from outside. Are you awake? I asked Betty Earl. I am now, thanks to you, he answered sleepily. I was dreaming about a girl's bicycle I got for Christmas. That wasn't a dream, I replied. That was a nightmare. Betty Earl yawned. Well, it was better than nothing, and it was easy to ride. I walked to the window and looked out. It's snowing, and there looks to be a couple of inches on the ground. At least it'll be a white Christmas, but without bicycles, Betty Earle responded. All ain't lost. Let's sneak out to the kitchen and grab a piece of candy before anyone gets up. A piece of hard rock candy was something I sure did not want before breakfast. As we entered the living room, the light came on. There stood our brothers, sisters, Dad, and Mom. Surprise! They all shouted. Betty Earle and I were far beyond being surprised, for there, near the Christmas tree, were two new bicycles. Both were redder than an evening sunset. Dad smiled. We had a favorable tobacco crop and extra money. All of us decided the money should go for a couple of bicycles. After a thousand thank yous and hugs, Betty Earle and I touched our new red bikes. Betty Earle grinned and gave me a light tap. What can be better than a white Christmas and two new bicycles? I paused only for a second. A special Christmas dinner with our family. And this was Christmas Joy Times Two by Douglas Clark. This next story is entitled Chipmunk Christmas. Even this favorite holiday tune couldn't bring a smile to his face. This was written and sent in by Sharon Jones. For one special night during that winter of 1963, Christmas Eve, our beds were moved back upstairs and piled with extra blankets to await the arrival of Santa during the night. Before we went to bed that night, I remember watching the blue flames under the oil heater and worrying about how Santa would get into the house. Luckily, still believing in magic explanations was easy for a six-year-old girl, even though my dad, prankster that he was, had warned me that when Santa came, he was going to pull on his beard just for fun. Before heading upstairs that night, I remember my mom, my sister, and me enjoying our annual Christmas Eve tradition of snuggling on the couch to admire those big colorful bulbs on the tree and listening to Christmas songs on the record player. Songs like Gene Autry's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Those were my favorites. We would sit there until I got sleepy. Then off to bed we went. Sleeping soundly that night, I was unaware of the drama that had unfolded between my brother and my dad after I'd gone to bed. All I knew was that around 4:30 a.m., Christmas morning, my sister and I awoke to the strands of music floating up the stairs. It was Alvin and the Chipmunks singing the Chipmunk Song, or Christmas Don't Be Late. Excited and totally unaware of the early hour, we ran downstairs to see what Santa had brought for us. Of course, I was oblivious to my brother's sour disposition all day as I excitedly played my record over and over on my very own Santa-delivered record player. I kept on playing the record for many days to come, which I now know must have felt like having salt rubbed into a raw wound, as it was the record player that was the source of the Christmas Eve drama. Apparently, when my brother learned of the record player on Christmas Eve, he demanded that the music had better not wake him up too early the next morning. Not to be told what he could do in his own home, my dad got up extra early that morning, put the record on, and cranked the volume all the way up, waking the entire household. Today, some 60 years later, as I occasionally pass the small house where we used to live, I see no remnants of the family that lived and loved there, but my memories remain strong and feel as real now as they did back then. That record player was long gone, but I still have that special record from so long ago, and this wonderful, funny memory of that long-ago Chipmunk Christmas. And this was Chipmunk Christmas by Sharon Jones. This next Christmas story is entitled Prayers for Soldiers and Dolls. This little girl believed her prayers would be heard by God and by Santa. This was written and sent in by Elizabeth Wagner. It was the mid-1940s in the mountains of East Tennessee. I was 5 that year. My sister, Charles, was 7. World War II was in full swing, and patriotism was high. We had a war to win and didn't complain that everything from sugar to coffee to shoes and tires was rationed for the war effort. But Christmas was coming, and our spirits were high. In the mountains, everyone was poor, except we really didn't know it. Poor was just a way of life. Christmas was family. We had abundant food grown by us, church pageants, and few, if any, gifts. That year, my dad joined most of the other farmers at the aluminum plant to work, so things were looking up. That Christmas Eve, Charles and I were kneeling by our bed, saying our prayers. Charles knew so much and had already said a beautiful prayer, but the best I could do was mimic her. "Bless our boys in service, and please keep them safe," she prayed, her hands folded prettily and her blue eyes closed. My hands covered my face, and I peeked through my fingers to admire her serene face and her blonde curls hanging like a halo around her head. If God heard anybody's prayers, it would be hers. After Charles' amen, it was my turn. After my blesses and thanks, I ended with, "And please have Santa bring me a doll, and Charles too," I mumbled into my hands. "I really, really want one, and I don't care if it's not fancy." As we climbed into bed, Charles scolded me. "Remember, Mama told us not to ask for selfish things," she said wisely. "There's a war going on, and we must think of others." She blew out the kerosene lamp by the bed. "Besides," she went on, "we already had the best Christmas yet. Remember that candy Uncle Dobie brought us?" Dobie was our mother's brother, home on furlough from the army for a few days. He had just visited us, bringing us a huge box of chocolates, which would be opened on Christmas Day. The chocolates were a great gift for our family, as candy was scarce due to the war. But even so, we always had a little from a yearly box of chocolate-covered cherries and the peppermint stick candy that would be in our stockings on Christmas, along with an apple, an orange, a few nuts, and if we were lucky, a tangerine. Usually there was a small gift tucked inside, too. A little toy watch or some hair bows. Now we'd have Uncle Dobie's candy, too. Still, I dreamed of a sleepy-eyed doll that could cry. Through the open door, we could see our empty stockings hung on the mantel, and our Christmas tree, which Daddy had gone into the woods and cut that day. We always got our tree on Christmas Eve morning, and once it was in place, Mama would bring out her carefully saved decorations from years past. There were just a few worn store-bought ornaments. The rest were homemade. Last, Mama would bring out her precious silver icicles that had been used over and over. New decorations made of foil were not available due to the war. I could hear Charles breathing softly as she slept, but my thoughts were on dolls. I was positive my prayer would be answered. I dozed off, but woke with a start. I could hear movement in the living room, and I thought I could see a dark figure quietly making its way through the shadows in the room. Could it be? Was it Santa? I was petrified and thrilled all at once. I lay as still as if frozen, and I closed my eyes tightly. Then all was quiet, but I was afraid to look. I was sure it was almost dawn by then, so I shook my sister. "Charles, Charles, Santa came." She turned over and pulled up the quilt. "Go to sleep, Bet," she said. "Santa ain't even real." "It's too," I returned. I was crushed, but I settled back down to wait for daylight. Somebody had to fill those stockings, and I knew it was Santa. At first light, we slipped into the living room and found our stockings. We put a log on the banked fire and contentedly pulled out our goodies. Presently, Mama came into the room, sleep in her eyes and her long hair, usually worn in a victory roll, hanging loose around her shoulders. She smiled indulgently. "Did you find anything under the tree?" she asked. Like a bullet, the two of us were up and by the Christmas tree. It only took a moment to realize that hidden behind the tree were two big, beautiful dolls. They were identical except for the color of their pretty dresses, and our names were on them. It was the most beautiful sight I had ever seen. "Told you Santa was here," I bragged to Charles. She and Mama smiled knowingly, but said nothing. Well, that's our program for today. You've been listening to Reminiscing on Sun Sounds of Arizona, Arizona's 24-hour reading station. This is your volunteer reader, Dr. Mary Ellen Stepanek, wishing you good afternoon and good memories.